Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Hope you guys are doing fantastic today. We have a very special lady today. Her name is Amanda Sokol and she is in commercial real estate, and she's doing a lot of very interesting stuff. We just had a short conversation right before we started the show, and I can't wait to have this conversation. It's going to be really interesting. Amanda, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Pleasure, pleasure. You know what? Before we even start digging into your story and how you got into this whole thing called real estate, if you could tell us, give us like a 2-minute elevator pitch about your business. What do you do?
Sure. So mainly I am a landlord. I have a portfolio of rental properties, mostly in South Jersey, but New Jersey, Philly, that I self-manage. So I use, you know, big tech and all that good stuff. And then deals that I don't buy myself, I'll find buyers for. So I deal with a lot of off-market deals. And those I will also do debt and equity on. So it's kind of like a one-stop shop kind of thing.
Okay. So, okay, debt and equity also. So that gives us basically a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of topics. You know what? You know, before we start talking about all the interesting things about the market and about what you do exactly, how'd you get into this?
So I used to do deeds for the Philly Sheriff's Office. So I got to know a lot of investors that way. So I would see like the deeds, you know, as I'm typing them, like for like 10 grand, 5 grand. And I'm like, I would watch some of the addresses and kind of see that they would then sell for like 100 grand. And I got to know a lot of those guys. I have actually still friends with them. But I got to know them really well. And then I ended up when I was in college, I had a horrible landlord. And I bought the house that I lived in. So I lived on 36 in Spring Garden. And that was my first investment property. So it was on Drexel campus. That was a duplex. So I bought that. And then I went to South Jersey, sold my Philly stuff. And I negotiated short sales. So it was kind of like another way to find a really good deal. Doing that, and then I just kind of grew from there.
So tell me something. Okay, you got to that point, you got to South Jersey, you got to, you know, those three first deals, but how do you manage to get from that first deal, because we're talking about a lot of capital that you have to actually get, you know, so that gets me a little curious. How did you scale from that point?
So I actually had someone that would give me 100% financing. So I met a woman developer, actually, well, ex-developer. She was kind of retired and she became a private lender and she would lend me 100% of construction, 100% of purchase. And so like, basically I would walk away from the table with like my entire construction budget. So I would be able to do, you know, 6 properties at a time. So I would do, I started in single families because around me, like in the, I guess you would call them like BC neighborhoods, you were able to get a single family house for like 60, 70,000. I'm actually still refining some of them for like the third time. But like, I still have them. So, you know, over time I'd rent, I think they call it the Burr method or whatever they call it. So I'd buy it, renovate it, rent it out, and refi, basically. So it was a lot because I'd have a lot of refis going on at one time. But I managed the construction and, you know, I did all the leasing myself. I still do, actually.
So tell me something. Okay, leasing is something that everybody could figure out, but construction is something you have to really get into. How did you get to understand construction?
So my dad is actually a contractor.
Oh, nice.
So I grew up in construction. He used to make me go to work with him all the time. So I'm probably like the, you know, very few women that know how to hang sheetrock, but I do. You know, he kind of taught me everything, taught me to be very independent. Like I know the basics of plumbing, but I know how much things cost. I know the labor involved and, you know, I know a lot about construction. It's definitely helped me a lot for sure. I'm very hands-on.
Tell me something, when you actually scale and you did from single family, which you did, and you're still refining and enjoying it, which is cool. But once you scale from that and you move to multifamily, which you did, and you just, right before the show, you did, if I correct me if I'm wrong, up to 20 something units, which is already a significant type of multifamily. The scaling from single family to that level, tell us what it takes to scale to that level, whether it's construction or management or finance.
I think I definitely did it. So I started single family and then I ended up getting a crazy deal on a 4-unit at a sheriff sale. So I got it for $51,000, which in my town is like a joke, like land lots sell for like $300,000. So I had an underground oil tank, had a tree growing up through the middle. It was like the worst property ever, but I was able to take it from, you know, $51,000 to now it's worth like, you know, $700 or whatever it is now. Mm-hmm. But so I kind of started there, and once I had the equity in that project, I was kind of able to snowball off of that and then get bigger and bigger, you know. So once you show that you can manage single family homes, which honestly is way harder than managing a multi because you have all these different properties all over the place, you know, you know every house has its own roof, every house has its hot water heater, you have different maintenance people in different areas. So it's definitely more logistic wise, tougher to do single families than multi. But I think once I did that 4-unit, I was able to then buy a 6 and then buy an 8 and kind of build my way up. But like, even now, if I go to somebody and I'm like, I want to buy 100 units, like they're not going to, even now, I feel like, I definitely have a partner on it for sure.
Why not?
I don't know. You know, it's like there's definitely a stigma with single families. I don't care how I got to where I am, but yeah.
But you already are at the level of having 20 units. So, you know, you could, meaning jumping to 100 units, I think it takes maybe partnerships or different types of structures, syndicators that are coming along and stuff like that. So it's definitely doable. I've seen it in action. So it's definitely there, and you're definitely on the route of being there. And I think that, you know, just looking at your career, it's very, very impressive how you came out from doing everything yourself to teaching everything yourself. Obviously you had a good teacher, like you said, but eventually getting to the point that you got, it's very, very impressive to understand the financial game. Tell me something. Let's talk a little bit about the finance part of things. Meaning you have now a property and you need the capital. And let's say you want to give us an example. Like it doesn't have to be, you don't have to mention where and what, but just give us an example. I got a property, it costs like this, costs like that. I got this and I need capital. What do I do?
So for my own deals?
Yes.
Or for like, I'm doing it for somebody else?
You could give us both, meaning I guess both examples.
Okay. So for my own deals, I try to do the highest leverage loan. So I will do like a 90% bridge usually, or, you know, hard money loan, one of the two, because I know that the deal that I'm getting is that good that I won't have an issue refining out of it. those are the deals that I typically buy. I like to do a higher leverage than taking on too many partners. I do have a lot of great partners, but in smaller deals, it's not really worth it to, you know, to split up the value like that. So I'll just do a higher leverage and then just refinance. If it's for a client that needs equity for a deal, I usually try to target, like, let's say it's in a specific area. I'll go to like the investment groups that are in that area. I go there, you know, kind of try to feel those out, see how they are, the accountants, lawyers, you know, like people that handle wealth management, and say, hey, listen, like I have this client, like, because usually the people I work with are the sponsors are very experienced. I can say, you know, this is their track record. This is what they do. You know, do you have anybody that would be interested in investing? I usually start there and then go out and, you know, kind of I'll reach out to, you know, equity companies too, but they're usually expensive for like a smaller deal.
So here's the question. You're doing it for your clients, and why wouldn't you do it for yourself, for example? Going to family offices, wealth management offices, you know, equity shops, et cetera. Why, meaning, what's the strategy here?
Everybody always asks me that.
Yeah.
It's definitely different to sell yourself than it is to sell someone else, for sure. But also, too, I don't like to give up any of my projects. Like, I like to own it 100%.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I think I found, and everybody's listening, found the loophole of why you can't get to the 100, 150,
yeah,
100
exactly.
units.
Yeah.
That's it. All you have to have is a few partners, and there you go. And you are and you're set, and you're set, and you're set. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely holding me back is my amount of cash. You know, really buying anything huge, but. Maybe one day I'll sell everything.
Sounds very exciting. Tell me something. Is your focus, it seems like your focus in terms of asset class is multifamily. That's what you're going for always? That's your game plan for the long term also?
So I've kind of switched it up. Like, you know, I started as single family, then I went to smaller multis, and then I started doing like mixed use because everybody was buying multis. So I was like, I don't like to go where everybody else goes because it just gets too expensive. So I always like to kind of like pivot and do something else that everybody's not doing. Like right now, everybody wants garden style multifamily 100 plus units, right? So like, I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for like the stuff that no one's buying is where I go. And that's where you find the best deals. So, you know, like office space or retail or something like that, which I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but I feel like I will soon, hopefully, on something office.
Why do you feel, because there's certain knowledge base that you need. I always talk about this also in my courses, but basically there's a knowledge base that you need to have for multifamily, which is definitely a lot higher than the knowledge base that you need for a single family. Single family, you do pretty much on your own. Multifamily, all of a sudden, you're a conductor of an orchestra. You have a team. You whether they are in-house or outsourced, doesn't matter, but you have to like pulling all these moving parts together, right? All of a sudden comes retail, and it's completely different, and you need to know and understand different type of things like KPIs for retail, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Tenant mix, rules, and all kinds of things that you need to understand when it comes to retail, as well as office. You need to understand how office property works. So tell us a little bit about this. Now that you're thinking of going that route, what would you do in order to get yourself that knowledge that you need, how do you get it already?
So I think for that space, I would definitely go in with a partner who's done it before. Just because I really don't know that much. I really want to do like a cool co-working, you know, like take an office building and make it like just a little bit more modern and do a different concept with it rather than just the traditional office space, you know, like something that's full of like amenities, and they don't have a lot of that in South Jersey. The co-working spaces that we do have are very small. It would be cool to have like an actual co-working complex that's like, you know, big and cool. But I would definitely do it with a partner for sure. I wouldn't just like wing it and try to figure it out.
That's the answer I was looking for.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's a very good one. Very good one. Tell us a little bit about your role as a broker, as a person who makes the connections. How did you get into that part? And because there's a very huge difference between being a landlord, a deal maker, your own deal person. You're very your own deal person. You do your own deals. You own it 100%, all that stuff. And all of a sudden, there's the broker part. The broker part is a completely different aspect. You're selling. You're sourcing for other people. It's completely, completely different. Tell us a little bit about those two worlds. Where do they collide? Just like in Seinfeld. Worlds collide. Yeah. And all that stuff.
So during COVID, actually, I had a lot of tenants that stopped paying. It was pretty rough for me.
Oh my gosh.
So I kind of creative, I guess, came up with ideas of how I kind of take stuff that I already know how to do and make additional income for it to kind of float my rents for the time being. I mean, I had people that didn't pay me for like years that I actually finally just got out. But like, you know, it was rough. I mean, like the governor went on TV and said, you know, you don't have to pay your rent. And all of a sudden it was like a week later, people stopped paying, you know, not everybody, but I definitely had a decent amount of people. And then they would apply for the programs, but the programs wouldn't kick in for 6 months, you know, like, so you'd have to float it until you got paid. I mean, it was definitely difficult for sure.
Yeah, to deal with the lenders, obviously.
Yeah. Well, no, because I was paying them. So like, but I had additional income. So that's when I started, you know, if I knew a friend or whoever that wanted to sell, then I would just start linking them with other people because everybody I know is in real estate to some degree. So, you know, if they owned an asset that was like, you know, their grandparents and they just didn't want to manage it or, you know, they had something like I had a friend that had a multi and there was a whole bunch of partners and one partner wanted out and he's like, how about we just sell? So I was like, well, just tell me how much you want for it. And he told me and I was like, oh, I know somebody that'll buy that. And that was like the first deal I kind of did. And it was during COVID.
That's amazing how everybody experienced this whole thing in different ways and different hardships. And that was incredible how you pivoted basically. And you came out and you said, okay, I'm going to do brokerage, meaning I'm going to go and broker it out and find the other buyer or another person who needs it. Tell us a little bit about debt and equity, being a person who also connects debt and equity. How does that work?
Also during COVID, I went to work for my friend who owns Diligence Capital Advisors. So they're a like a debt and equity firm brokerage. So I worked for him too because I was like, I need a job at this point. Because I wasn't really buying. During COVID, I didn't really buy that much. And the stuff I did buy, it didn't go well. So like, not that I didn't lose money, but the tenants were just, you know, it was definitely difficult. So I went to work for him. And I went to college for finance and economics. So I'm already an analyst by trade. So like I know how to do my own numbers, my own performance, all that stuff. So basically I started working for him and I was like, oh, this is great. Like for myself, like I got to meet, like I have lenders that I can text and ask questions and get terms in like, you know, 2 minutes. So definitely helped propel me for sure is having those lender relationships. And getting to know all them and getting to know what they look for in a deal, I think, and what they look for in sponsors. And, you know, like if people come to me with a deal right away, I can say, well, you've never done office. Like you're going to go to this bank and be like, hey, give me, you know, $15 million. They're going to be like, you've never done this before. You know, so then I kind of realize what they look for, what I can do to kind of fix things before it's presented to the bank. You know, whether it be partnerships or whatever.
Very cool. Tell me something. Today's market is a very interesting market. Everybody's talking about that. Everybody's talking about, actually I was in touch with the company that, you know, we were talking about doing something together. And then they said, listen, but we are not going for any acquisitions anytime soon, which is definitely something that I hear a lot nowadays. Can you tell us a little bit about the market of today, low caps, challenging environment in terms of finding deals, the fear of where is the market going that is today? We're talking about the market is in a different place today. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences when it comes to that?
So, I mean, I still find deals, but I think they're definitely harder to find. I don't buy any less than like an 8 cap usually. And then I do that even at like a value add. But I definitely put a lot of work into the properties I buy. Like I buy them pretty bottom of the barrel, you know, or like, you know, maybe they were mismanaged or, you know, the rents haven't been raised in 10 years, like that kind of thing is what I buy. I kind of always stayed in that space. So it's definitely easier to find that deal than it is to buy like, you know, a 4 cap. It's just never been my thing. But it definitely is scary for sure. Like, I don't know, like if you're buying with traditional financing, I guess it's fine. But like, if you're going in on a bridge and you're buying at a 4 cap thinking you can take it to a 6 and then rates go up and all of a sudden your 6 cap is now, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. My whole thing is buy well. So I just, when I buy, I know that no matter what, the value is always going to be there.
Right. Which is best strategy. But tell me something, finding those deals is a huge challenge. So I have two questions. One is a question that you say, I'm sorry, off-market deals. It's like a term that everybody's talking about, off-market deals. And I heard already people say there's no such thing in off-market deal. Because the second it's on the market, it's not off market, it's on the market. Yeah. Just call it an off market deal. But let's call it an off market deal, which is a deal that very few people know about. So the question is, how do you get to those deals? That's the first question.
So I have a lot of wholesalers that I work with. Great wholesalers that I've known for years. I give them target areas. And then I will give them like target asset classes that I would buy for myself personally. So it's basically like they're going out to look for stuff for me. And then if I don't like it, because again, like I'm picky, right? Like I need to get a really good deal or I'm not buying it. So I know that there's people that just need something to buy, you know, so it's still a decent deal. It's just not something for me for whatever reason. So, I'll then take it and present it to, you know, I'll either put it on LinkedIn or if somebody had reached out to me before, I'll send it to them and see if they want it. And it's just very easy. The whole thing is easy. You know, it's like, okay, I want this price and these are the terms I want. And then I just go to them and say, this is what he wants. You know, it's very straightforward. And, you know, and I'm also very transparent. Like, so because I know construction, I can kind of go through and be like, it needs 80 capex, you know, or it needs 3,000 a unit, you know, that type of thing.
That's because of your experience, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they always ask me why I'm not buying it. Then I gotta tell them why.
So what do you tell them?
That's just not a good enough deal for me.
Yeah. Usually. Which is true.
Yeah.
Which is true. So tell me something. You get into a deal and you do want the deal. What makes it your deal? Obviously, we understand that. You want an A cap. You want something that you have a value add aspect. We get that. But if you could be vivid about this, I'm entering this deal. I'm going into a property and I see this, 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 and this. The numbers look like this, 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 and that. Give us like an example to educate us a little bit about the, you know, your, I would say perspective, your, how do I do things?
So I like deals that have at least one vacant unit, right? So that way I can move people around. So I'll take them and I'll move them from one. I'll say, hey, look, like I'm going to upgrade your unit, move them into another unit while, you know, so I renovate that one, move them in there, then renovate theirs and kind of, you know, that way I can get all of the units turned over eventually. So like at least one unit, but I prefer to have like two. And then, you know, you can kind of eventually get a good chunk of the building renovated that way in between turnovers. Because people now, I feel like, aren't leaving. So if you have tenants in a place, like, there's not many places to go. So most of them stay. So, you know, your turnover, I have very few turnovers. Everybody wants to stay. So I look for that. Vacancies for sure. Low rents, where I know the market. I don't usually buy rent control. I mean, I will, but I don't 100% understand it, to be honest. You know, like every city, I feel like it's different. And yeah, like South Jersey has no rent control. So I don't really buy that. I mean, I will if the deal still makes sense with it, but I prefer not to. So low rents, vacancy, and then a lot of CapEx. Like I like ones where I can go in and put a new roof on it and, you know, kind of upgrade mechanicals and that kind of stuff to add value. My talk.
Very cool. So what is something that you would see your numbers, but you would stay out of? Like it will be like, I'm not touching that thing. Like the numbers are right, 8%, the cap, there's like, you see the CapEx there, not doing it.
Huh.
Roof?
No, I don't know. Rent control, probably.
Like, rent control.
I feel like that I need to be able to either turn over or move people around. And if you know, if I'm kind of.
Right, if it's rent control, you can't do it, obviously.
Yeah, then I can't. Like if I can't renovate it, there's really, it's really hard for me to get value. And that's mostly right. How I do it. Yeah, and then you can't raise the rents. So yeah, that's tough. Like a fully occupied building that needs work, I probably wouldn't buy.
So tell me something, and it's very interesting because, you know, you have different types of people, different types, you know, of businesses that people like to do different things because they are different. They are wired differently. And you definitely said, I want to own things 100%. That's how I am, et cetera, which is great. Meaning some people like to be, you know, partner in a $300 million building, you know, $300 million property. And some people like to be on their own with a much smaller type of deal. And some people like to be on their own with a single family. You have different people. My question to you is, when it comes to your team, are you a one woman show or you have a team? It's in-house, outsource. How do you operate your business?
So I am pretty much a one woman show, except for I have an assistant. But besides that, I do mostly everything myself. But again, because I go in and renovate everything, I have very little like maintenance calls because everything's pretty much new. So I don't really get a lot of calls for property management, sometimes like silly stuff. Like I had a squatter recently in a building that was kind of rough because it affected the entire building. It's like she had parties and then she cut the plumbing and, you know, so that was like a whole different scale. Yeah. But for the most part, everything I can pretty much handle myself. And then I have a whole construction team and I have a maintenance guy.
And are they like outsourced? You hire them? They're not on your payroll.
They're not on my payroll, but they might as well be.
I got it. They're like, you use these guys, they go and they do things that you need and they get it done.
I always have something under construction. Like I think right now I have like 5 jobs going on maybe, including my own house.
Nice.
Yeah. No shortage of work over here.
All right. That's great. Tell me something. What's the type of stuff that usually is being done in your properties?
As far as like renovations?
Yes.
So I go in, I usually do like vinyl plank click floors and I always put granite in. I always do stainless steel appliances. I try to make them, no matter what the neighborhood, I make them as nice as they can be pretty much. And I do start with like the main structure itself first. So make sure that the roof is okay. There's no leaks, siding, termite damage, all that stuff is fixed first. Then I go to the inside.
Got it. And if there's a damage there, would you get into a deal like that to deal with it? Because sometimes it could be really costly.
Yeah. I buy like the worst things that you can buy pretty much.
Because you do it everything yourself. So, you know, I got it. Very, very cool. The advantage of growing up in a, how to say, with a contractor. So
yeah.
That's huge. So basically you just said you do everything from structure all the way to the tiles, all the way to getting appliances, getting the right things done, decorating it in a certain way. You are literally a one-woman show, and that's admirable. That's beautiful. That's amazing. Tell me something. Can I ask, usually I don't ask women that question because I get in trouble, but how old are you?
So I think I'm 36. I was born in 1985. I don't know. Is that 36? Am I 36?
Okay, cool.
July 23rd.
Cool. Yeah. So I'll tell you. So first of all, it's amazing. Your accomplishments are incredible. But you're still young. What is next for Amanda? Where are you going with all this stuff? What are your goals from here? More of the same units. You want to go maybe and explore really those larger units with partnerships. No, where are you going? What's your next level?
Because I don't ever really picture myself going in that like 100 to 300 multi range. It's just not that interesting to me. And it's too expensive. Unless like I got something that I thought was really cool and I could kind of make it like really transform it. Right. But I don't know that would be worth the work. I haven't come across anything yet. I want to do something different. I'm definitely bored of multifamily. Like I want to do something like whether it's office or something like that. Somebody tried to talk me into RV parks recently and I was like, I don't know. It might be too different. I don't know. Like even I can't get into self storage. It's kind of boring to me. I mean, maybe building it would be cool, but I don't know. I like redevelopment. So I like taking like adaptive reuse. So I could see myself doing maybe more of those projects. But eventually, like, I would like to do a huge project, like a skyscraper type crane. Like, I love cranes. So, like, any type of deal with steel, really. Like,
you'll need partners for that one. You know that.
I have partners on that. Yeah.
Eventually, you will need
Hopefully in Philly. It would be in Philly, for sure.
Yeah. Tell me something. You are... I forgot what I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you about, actually, you wanted to get into, you've mentioned before, a WeWork type of a co-working type of an office. Why are you curious about that?
So I just think that, like, office is, like, one of those things, like, I even toured one the other day, like a 10X auction, and I was like, the lighting in here is just, like, it's, like, you know, everything feels so dated. It's like office needs a total like revamp of let's make it cool and fun where people actually want to be here. Like who wants to sit under those like fluorescent lights with the drop ceiling and like the old 80s carpet? You know what I mean? Like let's do something fun that like people can go outside and like have a cool place to hang out. And you know, I think it just feels like a dated, like it needs to be redone really, is what it feels like to me.
All right. So that's really touching another topic of how and where is the office market going, which is very, very challenging nowadays. And nobody really knows. So that's another aspect of conversation, which we're not going to get into. But here's what I remember when I wanted to ask you is, did you do development from ground up?
So no, I've never done ground up. My partners all call me the reno queen. They basically want to, instead of knocking things down, I just want to take them and renovate them. To me, I think it's always been about saving money. So like, to me, if you save the walls, like you're saving money, right? Like everything that I keep, therefore I've saved money. It's like how my mind thinks, but it's not always the best way to be. I mean, there's definitely, you know, like in Jersey City, for instance, like I do condo conversions there with my partner, who's amazing. But, there, sometimes it makes more sense to knock the house down because then you can do parking, like first floor parking, do condos, you know, with super tall ceilings and, you know, and that kind of thing. But no, I haven't done it. I've stuck as the reno queen for now.
You're a queen. Definitely the reno queen.
But, I mean, it's definitely interesting to me. Like, I think I would do it in the city. I don't know if I would do it in, like the utilities and all that stuff seems really tedious to me. I do like finding the land for developers. So I do like that part, like scouting the land deals, working with zoning. I have a lot of municipality relationships. So I'm on the housing authority in my town. So I work closely with a lot of other towns. So I like that part of it, but it just takes too long. Like it's like 2 years to get it off the ground and then another year to build it. It's like
amazing.
I've done 20 things by then.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. That is absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct. It really depends in the in the municipality of how long it takes really to develop a property to get the right permit, sometimes even rezoning. So it's even more time.
Yeah.
But, I hear you. So you enjoy being the reno queen, as you just said.
Yeah. And
that's pretty cool. Amanda, thank you so much for this. This was really cool. Tell us where people can find you, whether it's LinkedIn or there's a website, whatever it is. If these are people who want to invest, people who want to buy, and you can help them as a broker or equity wise, tell us.
Yeah. So I am on LinkedIn, Amanda Sokol.
Look at the link. It's right here. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's somewhere.
My email is amanda@socolcre.com. And yeah, I'm kind of all over the place, Philly, Jersey City, New York. So
amazing. Amanda, thank you so much for this. This was great. And I'm sure you guys got a lot from it because we learned a lot. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Yeah, thank you. It was great to talk to you.
No problem. You guys take care. I'll see you in the next show. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.